부지방 부 그래 지난가 봐도 알려줘 주래디 나 생일 지금 멍구지 곧 회가 날 때도 와
나를
나도 심도 와디
나를
근데 잠에서
나를
뛰어 오도 와
나를 actually up to the fifth standard that all the science books have been translated into English sorry in Tibetan up to the fifth grade and now all the medium all the subjects modern subjects are now taught in Tibetan including science so the TCV students who have finished the fifth grade they are familiar with many scientific terms in native Tibetan language but as Solomon was saying that these terminologies are
ago,
so new
one time I visited there then they explaining the preliminaries of science or as a study
textbook
or textbook they used Tibetan word which I don't know.
So it was new to his holiness, yeah. I guess, yeah.
So, Helen, you see they're getting science education in elementary school here.
So probably they were quite delighted because they knew words that the Dalai Lama did not know.
So, because he was a teacher, Bandara Shija. Shija, Shunju.
No.
Because the Zid Sab Shusha, Zid Shunju. Nadi Horashisa, and Sabi is a chimney. So, because of Dishi and the Senji Daji, Kasore, Ninderson Zidaji to the Jedi, and she chew Kare, Shia Jota, or she to the Jedi. The Lung Ziab, the Chigi, to the Shaki. And Poo from Shunju, Poo from Shunju, Shunju, Roger the Instrumental. This is actually Manzus. The any Sunzi on the Kodulia, Dajing service about this. The Maris. The because of that, Ninda does the Mulling Korjog, the Timnadia Jog. What was this? She was saying, pay out. Pay out.
Recently, Solomon said a wonderful experience. He was visiting last winter. He was visiting one of the very remote Tibetan resettlements settlements in central India, in the Maharashtra Strait, called Bandara area. This is actually a very deprived area of part of India. And this Tibetan settlement is quite poor and small. And the school invited His Holiness to visit. And it's a new school they've just started. So he went, he visited the class and there was a science class taking place. And
With little kids, only seven years old.
And the subject they were discussing on that day was the sort of phenomenon of eclipses and how eclipses occur. And there was a seven-year-old girl who stood up and explained how in the traditional Tibetan folk knowledge, the eclipses of solar and lunar eclipses are explained on the basis of there being another planetary called Rahula, which consumes...
Something like a god
figure that consumes one of these celestial bodies, and then we don't see it,
and then spits it out afterwards.
And then she was saying that this, although this is how it's in the folk kind of belief, it was explained. She was saying this is not true. We can explain. So she was giving explanation on the basis of the planetary motion.
That is so impressive.
That's great.
So you do get science. The Tibetan children get science education early. Mm-hmm. I also learned from Mathieu that the budget of the education department is huge in Tibet. It's 30% of the budget, right? I mean, in our society, it's probably less than 1%. So there's a big difference in priorities. And
yes, I don't know if it's still time, but it's about the notions of automatic acquired skill, of mindfulness, of effort and effortlessness. I thought maybe we could distinguish a few kinds of automatic acquired skill. There are some, as you said, like bicycle riding, and in Tibet, they offer the example of horse riding. In the beginning, you need to be so careful, just not to fall off the horse. Mm-hmm. But when those skillful riders, then they sort of play, catching something on the ground or shooting arrows when they forget about they are basically on horses. So you don't want anymore to think you are on horses. So that's why you said you don't want, it's an advantage not to have to think about bicycle riding or horse riding. So now the different kind of skill which becomes effortless after having required a lot of effort to reach to that. You need a lot of effort to learn horse riding. it becomes effortless and you want to forget about it. But now there is also, say, for instance, in mindfulness and attention, you don't want to forget about mindfulness and attention. At the same time, of course, with the acquired skill, it can become effortless in the same way. And what happens in that time, when it's effortless, it's more like a question of like a flow. I mean, you don't have to have this constant effort, contrived effort, which is not natural. But when it becomes a second nature, then we say, for instance, there's no more meditation, but you're not never out of the meditation. So that image says that you are not purposedly and forcibly sort of meditating, yet you are never distracted from it. So the element of mindfulness and vividness is still there because it is a result of a long-term effort. But though it's effortless, it's not distracted. You are not just sort of unconscious about it. So that element of freshness which Alan was referring to is precisely the quality of that mindfulness without effort. Freshness means a kind of natural presence which is very clear, very vivid, and not distracted. And also, so freshness in the sense that there's a kind of sense of freedom in it. Because freedom, you don't have to constantly bring back your mind. So in the beginning, the example that is given is that you try to concentrate and your mind wanders, you bring it back. It's a bit like the butterfly and the flower. It goes for a while, come back. At some point, that kind of effort is not required, but your mind is not in a state of confusion, distraction, dullness, excitement. So the freshness is simply the natural clarity of your mindfulness that is still there, and yet it doesn't require this forcible, constant maintaining of the effort. So that case is a sort of a kind of automatic skill, but it doesn't have this kind of confused or dull or just forgetfulness aspect. So that is very different kind of acquired skill.
It's only this translated. His Holiness translated this as an effortless, spontaneously arising meditative state. And this is the general sequence in attentional training. Actually, you need the greatest amount of effort at the beginning.
Yeah.
And the more skilled you become, the more effortless it becomes. And yet, you just as Matthew said, you don't space out. That freshness, that total presence remains, but it gets more and more effortless as you progress.
I just wanted to add an addendum to this, and that goes back to the point that you were making, Phil, and that is that there's a tendency in Western psychology, I think, to associate automaticity with unconscious activity. But I think that's actually a mistake, because in the driving example, you are conscious in the sense that you are aware and there is short-term memory, but there is no mindfulness in the sense of no recollection. So the appropriate contrast is not between unconscious and conscious, but rather between mindless consciousness and mindful consciousness in the recollective sense.
Someone was saying, otherwise you could have an accident.
On a different topic about the science in young age, I've been always struck also by the complete lack of ethics, philosophy, not in the terms of boring philosophy, but of the main question of life.
Yeah.
Because when we, some of my teachers went to the West, and sometimes they have special sessions for children.
Yeah.
You'll be amazed of the kind of question they ask, that no adult will dare to ask. Mm-hmm. What is time? Who's going to ask?
Yeah, that's right. Children.
Many questions about death.
Yeah.
So some friend of mine in the French countryside has philosophical workshop and ethical workshop. What is happiness? What is honesty? The kids love that.
Yeah.
6, 7 years old.
Wow.
Why do we have to wait for being 16 or 17 to go
exactly.
like that? So that's really also good. A big lack in education, because that brings also human values naturally.
That's
but
right.
I think you raised the critical point, because every parent, I think, has the experience of watching their child unable to attend to mathematics homework for 5 minutes, but being able to attend to a computer game in which they control the game for an hour or more. I think the question becomes attention to what and for what reason. And this goes, I think, to the concept that Evan was working with yesterday is almost a motivational construct that lies in front of attention, is why are you attending to what you're attending? Yeah. Phil spoke to the value of automaticity, and Rusty mentioned its merit, and there's no debate, I think, in that. But on the other hand, Helen, the point you raised was trying to capture then the child's natural sense of curiosity. Yeah. So the question then becomes, I think, in attention training, is not merely the skill, but also the interest level. Because with all due respect, when you talk about the freshness, that would seem to emerge not necessarily from the knowledge or the roteness or the ease with which this is dealt with, but rather the involvement that the individual has with the topic. And so perhaps, mm-hmm. to some extent, there's the challenge of trying to take, as you pointed out, Matsu, the child's natural interest in a particular topic and build the attentional training around that particular interest.
So in Western concept, you know, the closest notion, I think, is notion of flow, or the Xing Xi Mi Lai. And some school where, you know, when the children feel interested into something, they let it do that for as long as the children want, because it's in state of flow.
Yeah.
And so then they will maybe do more geography that day because they are interested. And then, but so that's probably the best way, because the interest is self-sustaining. And if they are bored, they won't learn anyway. So
that's right. But they're typically not given a chance to spend as much time as they like thinking about moral issues.
Yes,
that's what, sure. And that's a very important point. They do love that. And so that's a good segue to our next topic for this afternoon.
I think we should... just one last statement about science, because science is not just exploration and seeing things and being free to explore things. There are rules.
Yeah.
And that's the question of when do you teach the rules. It's one thing to be aware of your surroundings and be curious. But science is empiricism. Empiricism are the rules. The rules of empiricism are those which guide the acquisition of factual information that we can build on. And without those rules, and without understanding what those rules are in a very, very crisp way, then the information that you gather and try to put together, if it doesn't follow those rules, it's flawed or potentially flawed. So the question becomes, when do you teach, not just curiosity, when do you teach the rules of empiricism or evidence-based, but it's more than evidence-based information, how to extract as much truth as you can out of the environment? What are the rules that you teach to people, and when do they get to learn those, that there is experimentation of thought and replication and generalization, mm-hmm. and evaluation? And comparison. Those are rules that we have to follow in order to justify that the information that we're putting into our quivers are factual.
Mm-hmm. Can I make one caveat to that? Because I think it's so important, and it relates back to your point, Adam. And that is, for example, Helen, when you mentioned evidence-based, you mentioned biology and behavior. From the Buddhist perspective, evidence-based very much includes first-person experience of your own mind. That's also evidence. Right now, are you feeling agitated? Are you calm? Are you happy, sad? Are you angry? Are you miserable? And so forth. There's a lot of evidence that you may get indirectly by behavior, indirectly by doing brain scans, but we know, before we know any of that, you can just be sitting there and know your mental states. You can observe mental images, thoughts, and so forth, and there may be a curiosity there, but just as you have rules of empiricism and, how do you say, sophisticated, rigorous methods of inquiry, we don't have that in the West for the mind. Rigorous, sophisticated, first-person methods of inquiry into your affective states, mental states, wholesome and unwholesome, those that are or not conducive to our own and others' well-being. We don't have it. The Buddhist tradition is really quite advanced there and in multiple areas, and so it would be marvelous, too, to cultivate that kind of curiosity, and then also at some point, whether it's age 5 or 7 or 12, introduce rigorous methods for inquiry of these evidence-based first-person experience of your own mind. Then we'll have something more of a balance, and we may also have a much more rigorous basis for cultivating well-being, which Michael told us yesterday is a segue. Well-being for the parents will then trickle down into all these other good things. But if people don't develop this really clear, rigorous awareness of their own mental states, how will they have any basis at all for making judgments about what type of activity to engage in or not in terms of their own and others' well-being?
One point to respond to Rusty's question, just wanted to give an example from the monastic education, sort of traditional monastic education. From a very early age, when the monks are introduced to the debate, They are taught set moves to learn by memory, through memorization. And then these are illustrations of various logical principles, but they are never really explicitly taught what principles are being used. Yeah. And the actual introduction to the principles come much later. Mm-hmm. So one could start debate education. Now, this I'm speaking for myself, not interrupting. One could start at the age 7 or 8. So these are called collected topics. These are dura, collected topics, where various extracts from theological and epistemological treatises are put together in a kind of a systematic learning tool. And you know, many of these set debates illustrate principles, for example, the relationship between universals and particulars, like set theories, and the logical principles of identity and contradiction, the law of the excluded middle. All of these are implicit in these various debates, but the actual introduction to the logical principles probably doesn't take until the age 15 or 16. So, I mean, I'm not claiming that this is based upon some empirical evidence-based, you know, and you know, philosophy of education, but they must have, it must reflect something. Rita kandungu shi
war shule
ane marana namje ki tone gewa kende ki tsu tsu de jama ma lap yum tomang ye le dure tone pe sun kyan ja ki tone ta ji gewa dan de shi mo shi mo sum de ton lap ngu shi ta ta na mo ge ki to dan da de ki ta ma ta jama ma ta le ge ma na de ne ma ju de bu gu lo to dan shin be ton de la ba ta ji ma ro de de ne ji da
ngu shi ro de dure de dan de yi de pa shi 카도 가만에 제 말을 해야 돼.
20부터.
20부터 써서 돌아. 해지다. 이거도 사이콜로지 캐버진 게 말이 돼. 해지를 해야 돼. 계속 들으래.
Now. His Holiness is talking about commenting on the point that I made. If you look at the monastic education that is sort of that takes place according to this approach of the collected topics, although it is not grounded upon an explicit psychology of education, but one has to marvel at the which, you know, how it has been devised in the systematic order.
I think now would be a good time to move to our second topic of neuroethics. The topic of attention has been very attentionally absorbing, and now we can move on. One of the issues that we wanted to raise with you, Your Holiness, is one particular ethical principle, which is the principle of fairness, and that is raised by some of the neuroscience data that you have heard about over the last several days. We now have methods to potentially optimize certain qualities of human development, of human performance. And we are inevitably faced with the issue of how access to these methods or techniques should be determined. And in the West, there are many different views, but two principal views are very contrasting. One view is the view that our current president talks a lot about, which is summarized by No Child Left Behind. So the idea there is to provide access to as many individuals as possible, but at probably the lowest common denominator. Because... Another principle is, another view, is to identify the brightest or the elite in a particular area and put our resources into those individuals because they will be the leaders. So there are many other views as well, but we wanted to raise that and to get your understanding and perhaps help us better understand the Buddhist view of ethics related to these issues to help us be better able to communicate how our knowledge should best be used in public policy.